with Gorbachev coming in and rationalizing the relationship with the West, Saddam Hussein obligingly and very willingly stepped into the role of enemy and allowed that military-industrial complex to maintain its hold and command over resources. You see, the Pentagon's budget is $300 billion, and they were not willing to relinquish this. And they were losing ground, and people were clamoring for the peace dividend. When Saddam Hussein came into the picture, my God, I mean, the military-industrial complex, if they didn't have Saddam Hussein, they would have created one. But Saddam Hussein, as I said, foolishly, obligingly, filled the shoes of the enemy and allowed that military-industrial complex to maintain itself. One. Two, now really the Americans are very happy about proving the supremacy of their, what they call them, smart bombs, brilliant bombs, genius bombs, who knows what they are. I mean, they're talking about a fantastic market for Patriot missiles and for these bombs all over the world. And no, they're not willing at all to talk about weapons embargoes and things like this. On the contrary, they thought that the war had proven the supremacy and efficacy and effectiveness of their weapons. This is the time to go around the world and sell as much as they can. All right? I mean, I bet you one way of emptying the coffers of the people of the Gulf would be to sell them a huge amount of these weapons, one way or the other. I know, I'm convinced that there is a relationship between oil and this. I mean, they won't be really talking about these weapons and selling them if less people don't have purchasing power to buy them. And where does this purchasing power come from? It comes from oil. So there is a direct relationship there. Let me say three things here that are of relevance. I teach a course on the military-industrial complex, peace and development, so I've had good reason to look at these numbers. There are a number of ways of looking at the military burden. One way is to look at it as a percentage of GNP. I think it's a completely unacceptable way of looking at it. All right. The best way of look at it is to look at the military effort and divide it by what we call gross capital formation, the amount of investment. All right. Now, why we do this? Because once you look at the GNP, it's a very large number. Okay, and you know, people who are hawkish would love to use the GNP as a percentage. Say, oh, you see, we're only spending 5%. Okay. If you look as a percentage of investment, and in the U.S. investment is very small, especially savings, because it competes for the savings of people. And one thing known about the United States is that it has very small savings. And because it has very small domestic savings, they depend on the savings of the widows in Brazil and every place else by attracting all this capital. And that's why it's the net debtor of the world. So there it's 50%. It's extremely high. And there is also a tremendous amount of games played with this number. When you say military burden, what do you mean? Do you include veteran administration? Do you include civil defense? If you really include everything, that number really becomes extremely large. And one thing Reagan has managed to do, between 1982 and 1989, Reagan has managed to increase the defense expenditure of the United States. We saw the result of which in SDI, in the smart bombs, in the stealth bomb, it is by a phenomenal amount. Imagine between 1980 and 1989, the United States spent twice as much as it spent between 1940 and 1980. Huge amounts have been really devoted there. And if you look at the squeezed amount of savings that the American economy is creating and this large military burden, oh my God, the relationship is frightening.